Hey, what's up, guys? You are listening to the audio version of the special edition of Muscle Minds. The video is also available at YouTube, search Advices Radio, or on the Advices Radio Facebook page. You can find it there. Today, Dr. Scott and I bring on one of Scott's clients, Will, who is a competitive bodybuilder. He's a pretty big dude. He had been using gear on and off, and he wanted to shift gears and conceive a baby. So today we talk about the protocols that he and Dr. Scott employed and what it took for him to improve his fertility so that he could conceive. So we talk about that today, guys, and we have some charts and graphs and everything else. If you guys do watch the video version, that's pretty cool. This program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES at checkout. As I always mention, that will let them know that you support what we're doing. I have committed to using protein post-workout. I had stopped using a protein shake after I trained, just gone to my solid food meal, and I want to commit to adding as much muscle as I can. So I've worked that back into my nutrition, and I'm getting an extra 50 grams of protein every day. And I'm using the Team Skip blend for that, raspberry souffle. It's a solid flavor, but I think I'll go back to the strawberry sorbet after this one. You guys can reach out to Dr. Scott. He is at fortitudetraining.net. That's where you can check out his ebook, The Fortitude Training Guide. You can also go to byobbcoach.com and check out Scott's new book, Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach. He has the ebook version there. It will take you through planning your year. It'll take you through your off season, into your contest prep, all the way up to carb loading and water manipulation. It's a complete be all end all guide. It really is. It's so detailed. You could get the hardcover of that at Amazon. If you're international, you can purchase that at Barnes & Noble. That's Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach. All right, guys, let's get to the show.
Advices Radio Network.
The views and opinions of Muscle Minds is for informational and educational purposes only.
Better, stronger, faster.
All right, guys, welcome back to Muscle Minds. I'm Scott McNally with Dr. Scott Stevenson. This program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES at checkout. And this is going to be a special edition. Dr. Scott, first of all, welcome to your program. How are you doing, man?
I'm good. It's Sunday. It's going to be a nice day today. It's a training day, so I'm looking forward to going out, getting into like kind of a I just kind of train whatever. I have to kind of go with the flow. But Sundays are great because there's no one at the gym usually.
Yeah.
Except people who really like to train.
Yeah.
So it's always fun. So it's going to be a beautiful day.
And we have somebody with us today that you know very well. I've just met him today. Will, thank you for being with us today, man. Appreciate it very much, brother.
Hello. Thank you. It's my pleasure.
And so
Will's from Alabama, as you can tell from his accent.
Yeah. Deep South USA. No, I'm currently in the UK.
So You guys.
Sorry, go on, Scott.
No. So I wanted to kind of set this up. So I know that your goal was to get your wife pregnant. Apparently this was initially an issue. Dr. Scott had helped. We're going to talk to Scott today about what you guys did to actually achieve conceiving a baby, because this is a big topic. There's a lot of people that ask us, I think, Scott, on the programs about how they can either regain fertility or how they can maintain fertility. So I think this will be a great topic for us to explore.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we start? Where do we start here?
I had a bit of a suggestion. Shall I start with why I approached Scott and kind of how it all evolved from initially a bodybuilding discussion to very much a what do I do with my life discussion?
Yeah, definitely.
That's a great place.
Yeah. Okay, so back in 2017, I did a few competitions, and at the end of the last competition in the year, I was at a point where I personally felt that I couldn't really prep myself anymore. I'd probably done about 10 competitions up to that point, and it got to a point where I was kind of doing the same old thing and not really growing, improving as far as condition went each time, but not much else. So having listened to Muscle Minds and a number of other shows, I always felt that Scott's approach was what seemed the most sensible. And as a result, I got in touch with Scott to see whether he would want to coach me. He said yes. And when we first spoke about what the plan was, I basically said to Scott, turn me into an effing monster. And kind of no holds barred, right? And
yeah.
His response to that was, sure, we can do that, no problem. But what do you want to do as far as life goes, having children, etc.? Yeah. And my response was, well, I want to have children at some point. So he strongly suggested that I get my fertility checked to see where I'm at. Something which probably what most bodybuilders do, which is think they're going to be one of the lucky ones and think, no, I'll be fine. I'll conceive. I've heard of people who conceive while they're on. It's not an issue, right?
Yeah.
So I went and had that check done, and in a sample that should have contained 200 million sperm, there was six, not 6 million, just six.
Wow.
Of those six, one was alive and swimming.
Oh, my God. Five were
dead and doing nothing. So
I think Will said it just takes one, though, right? It doesn't quite work that way.
So I came back to Scott, and at that point, Scott really suggested, no, you need to speak with professionals. You need to go to fertility clinic. And, I'd been listening to Scott for a long time, and maybe to some extent I should have listened to his advice. Mm. Obviously, where I am now, I know that I listened to the right man's advice, but I was very much for Scott helping me and guiding me through this process. And the fact is, I did actually have those conversations with the fertility clinic where I had those checks done, because obviously when the sample came back, they said, oh, you're going to have IVF, and we're not sure you're going to be able to conceive. And, and I had conversations with them about HCG, HMG, what the options were, how could we recover things naturally. And they were very much against that. In fact, the first thing they advised I should use is a multivitamin. And I had that point. I just thought, are you kidding me? I'm dealing with the wrong people here, So, yes, well, then we set off on down that path and put Plan Monster on hold. So I guess that's how we got started.
Right. Yeah. I didn't remember that. You maybe hadn't told me that they suggested a multivitamin.
Oh, fuck. Yeah. Like a Wellman multivitamin.
One particular brand. Like,
yeah.
Known to bolster fertility. That's crazy.
Scott, is that common to have doctors, not really the medical community, not really understand how to help us?
I wouldn't think for a urologist. It depends on who you go to.
Yeah.
I mean, rest in peace, Dr. John Chrysler, who passed this past year. I mean, he's obviously someone who I used to refer lots of people to, has a totally different perspective and understanding of things. But, in the UK, it's obviously a different medical environment, so I can't say for sure how it is over there.
Yeah.
Although I work with lots of folks over there. But you would think – go ahead, Will. Yes.
I was going to say, they wanted to leave me for a year before you even attempted – any kind of drug use as far as recovering my fertility. Yeah.
Mm.
Now, a year's a long time to wait when you're trying to make a baby.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's a lot of suffering. Yeah. Hypogonadal male, too.
Oh, man. I had 2 months of that, and it was horrible. Like, you're trying to have sex, and you can't, right? And
yeah.
That's about the most demoralizing thing in the world as a man.
And yes, I imagine, too, that not only that, I'm sure your bodybuilding wasn't, like, at its peak at that point either.
Far from it. I think I look back at the check-in photos, and not only my body, but my face just got sadder and sadder and sadder through them. You know, you just see everything regress, and
yeah,
it's not a good point, not a good place.
I mean, the thing that's important here, the message people can probably take from this is that, you know, I'd have an intake. It's in my book. I do kind of a broad sweeping intake on what are the important things in a person's life and like what's going on with their lifestyle. Do they have a partner? What kind of job do they have, et cetera? And when it came about that, you know, Will wanted to have a family, that which just basically doesn't correspond very well with trying to put in 5 or 6 years to grow into the largest human being his genetics would allow. So,
sure.
Yeah. So lots of, it can be very, very, enticing to want to go and chase the glory, chase the medal, you know, chase the golden fleece, so to speak, in bodybuilding, and just think everything's going to be okay thereafter. And then maybe you're 6 years down the road. Who knows what? Maybe that relationship's even degraded because of that. Bodybuilding is a very, very selfish endeavor. So Will, to his credit, had the maturity to say, you know what? Overall, my family, my relationship with my wife, these are the things that are most important. And we're going to take care of those first. And he graciously allowed me to help him with that, which was just phenomenal. It was quite an honor, really. And so we got first things first. And then, you know, bodybuilding can be that's okay. Don't drop us. And then the bodybuilding, you know, can be a secondary goal, so to speak. So that's, did we lose Will? I lost his image there.
Oh, he's back.
Yeah, sorry. Had a moment with a dog licking my hand. And, anyway.
It's now that he has a family and the dog and everything, now he's got to deal with this.
Right. So that's the thing is that folks should just take a look at, like, what is bodybuilding going to mean? Is it a hobby? Is it literally those very, very small bits, small segment of the population that can use it as a way to make a profession? For most people, it's going to have to be secondary to all the other things that really make life worth living, like family and loving partners and those sorts of things. So that's kind of the perspective that we took with the path that he's been on.
Okay. Yeah. So what does that translate to logistically? You know, where was he when you started, say, with supplementation? And then what did you guys need to – was it – let me ask you this. So how did you guys achieve bringing his sperm count up? Because I assume that's eventually what happened. He was able to conceive. What were the methods that you guys needed to employ to get where he is today, I guess, is what I'm asking.
I'll let Will probably has a better memory because he lived it. I just sort of helped direct.
Okay.
In fact, I can bring up the logs. I've got my PC open, so
nice.
If I find the right page. But just to give you background on where, you know, as far as supplementation beforehand, and I'm quite happy to admit how stupid I was. In that last prep, so the last prep before I contacted Scott, my total usage a week was got up to 5 grams.
5 grams?
At one stage.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Wow.
And that included up to 800 milligrams of tren.
Oh my gosh.
And a whole bunch of other crap. Yeah, I mean, it was bad.
I mean, but that's not crazy talk. So, we hear that, you know? We hear people doing
it. Yeah, I'm sure I'm not the only person who did it.
Yeah.
Or does it. But anyway, so after that, I'm just trying to find the right sheet. But we essentially did the Power PCT protocol for 2 runs. So it was 28 days in which... it was HCG, clomiphene, and Nolvidex. So tamoxifen Nolvidex was 20 milligrams a day. Clomiphene was 100 milligrams a day. And HCG was 2,000 units every other day for 20 days.
Mm.
And after that, we dropped it to... It was tamoxifen 20 milligrams a day, clomiphene 50... and 1,000 units a week of HCG. At that point, I got my fertility checked again, and it was on the up. I think so at that point, I had 1 million per mil count which is it's still very low. So the what they expect is something between 15 and 20 million as a normal.
That's a million times better.
But it was than where I was to begin with.
Literally,
exactly. More than that, because that was one in a 10 mil sample.
Okay, so there you go. Yeah. 10 times better.
Yeah. After that, we ran another PowerPCT protocol. So exactly the same as the first time, 20 milligrams tamoxifen, 100 milligrams of clomiphene, and 2,000 units of HCG every other day. That was literally, so that was on the lead up to my wedding. Fortunately, by this, as I said at the start, I obviously told Danny what was going on, and Danny's my wife, at the time fiance, and what that potentially meant as far as having to go the unnatural way as far as conceiving went. And she wasn't particularly happy about it. I think, you know, she would have gone along with it if we had to, and she did say to me right at the start, you know, you better be able to make babies if you want to get married. And it didn't go further than that.
No pressure.
But, you know,
right.
No, you know what the message right. is, right? It's,
right.
Yeah, exactly. Pressure. Fortunately, you know, by the end of that first run, which was, so I think the test where I got 1 million per mil sperm was beginning of February 2018. So we were 2 months in. Then we had the second run of Power PCT, and that was pretty much right before my wedding. We got married, and the 3 weeks prior to my wedding, we introduced HMG as well, which initially was hard to get hold of, but honestly, I think it changed everything. We went from, you know, the doctors at the time after the 1 million per mil count of sperm were saying that we would probably be able to have a baby, but it would have to be in vitro or I can't remember what it's called now, but where they essentially inject sperm into her womb.
Let me interject. I just think, just so people are with us, Scott, maybe you can put that figure up now. It's not already. I don't know if I'll see it or not.
But I had it up. I'll put it up again right now.
Okay. Yeah. So it's the power is P-O-W-E-R. It's kind of nice, catchy, because it's powerful. But the P and the W and R is Program for Wellness Restoration by Dr. Michael Stallard. And this was actually, there's actually like just an abstract with some clinical evidence that it does what it did for Will.
Okay.
And it's something they created using basically trying to restart the testes with HCG and block the inhibition of the hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis using Clomid or Novodex, sorry, in this case, and then also an aromatase inhibitor. So we're trying to prevent the inhibition and then also promote spermatogenesis with HCG. HCG is basically luteinizing hormone, and that does have some impact on spermatogenesis, but that mainly is driving testosterone production in the testes.
Okay.
HMG is human menopausal gonadotropin, and that's going to be a mixture of FSH, follicle stimulating hormone, which basically is in males is going to turn on spermatogenesis as well as luteinizing hormone. So that's one, and people can Google that. There's a number of boards and actually studies demonstrate that's one that really does a nice job of turning on the spermatogenesis, which what we want. HCG can do the trick. A lot of people will use that, for instance, when they're on cycle because of whatever it may be, because normally that whole axis is shut down by the feedback inhibition of the androgens. So you've got no luteinizing hormone. You've got no FSH because your brain, your hypothalamus, pituitary sensing, you know, we got to put the brakes on androgen synthesis because we've got androgens galore. Yeah. So people will use LA or HMG, which is basically LH. To replace that signal from the pituitary to the testes. And the idea, at least, and I don't think I've really seen this directly, any direct evidence provided for, but it makes perfect sense physiologically, is that in doing so, you maintain the testicular function of testosterone production. So those cells, sort of along the, if you don't use it, you lose it type of idea, if they're no longer presented with any gonadotropin stimulation, in the way of LH and FSH, which would normally you'd have endogenously, you can supply that with HCG.
Okay.
Human chorionic gonadotropin. It's basically LH. Just of the they name it that way because that's how what it was found in women, the chorions in the placenta during the course of pregnancy. That's the hormone that's tested for in the urinary pregnancy test.
Hmm.
Just to connect the dots, people would often, back in the day, like the way that people would fake growth hormone was they'd give HCG instead of growth hormone.
I've heard this. So
if you want to get fake growth hormone, you could go get a pregnancy test, and if it tested positive, you're like, oh, that's HCG.
Yeah.
The HCG diet?
Yes.
HCG has some interaction with the thyroid stimulating hormone receptor. So it actually increases thyroid metabolism. Okay. That was the idea of using that when people were dieting down, like on zero calories, like that original diet was,
yeah,
because it'll maintain your thyroid output when you're just facing starvation level calorie intake.
And that's what that was. So, that was like 500 yeah. calories or something a day, right?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. People, that still is floating around, you know, people like to choose different things. So anyway, that's some kind of offshoot. But the idea of HCG there is to get the testes going. So you're basically revving up the sperm factories and the testosterone factories and the testes, and you're trying to also restore the normal hormonal connections between the hypothalamus, pituitary, and the testes by blocking that inhibition caused by estrogen primarily. And of course, there's no androgens floating around because we're not using those at the time. So you don't have that inhibition. But estrogen seems to be a really or estrogenic metabolites seem to be a really strong inhibitor of that whole axis. Because if you got testosterone at a nice level, you're going to have some estrogen. That would be at a normal level. But if testosterone's too high, you're going to aromatize and have a lot more estrogen.
Yeah.
And that's sort of like – that's the marker of like an overflow of testosterone. Testosterone's overflowing enzymatically into estrogens, and that's a great thing for the brain to sense and say, okay, we got to slow down the gonadotropin release. We can block that estrogenic act at the brain with the Novodex. Clomid may be a better choice, but that's a, you know, fine. That's another topic. And then we want to get the testes going with the HCG. So that's the idea. Mm. And the HMG is a great addition. So we added that and then things were moving in the right direction.
So, can I ask a question? So you guys did two rounds of the Power PCT. Did you run one round and then just go straight back to back into the other one? Or did you evaluate from there and say, yeah, we need to keep going? How did that work?
Yeah, there was a 4 week break between the two runs. Okay. And in those 4 weeks, so we dropped the HCG and clomiphene right down. The clomid dropped to 50 milligrams from 100 during the Power PCT protocol, and the HCG went down to 100 units a week as opposed to 2,000 every other day.
Okay.
So I think Scott was the mind behind that, but I assume that's just to keep things, you know, on some kind of stimulation going as opposed to none at all, given where I was before we even started the first Power PCT run.
Yeah.
At that point was when I had that first test done, the second test done, where I was at a million per milliliter of sperm. And obviously, whilst that was a huge improvement on where I was at a couple of months before, we were still being told, and you know, still well below what would be considered to be a normal fertile male. So we ran a second run, and fortunately, at the end of that second run, because HMG is a real pain in the ass to get hold of here in the UK, but I managed to get some, and we put that in at the back of the second piece Power PCT run.
Mm.
So that was in for 3 weeks before we went on our honeymoon, which was, I think, a huge blessing. Everything kind of lined up very luckily for me at that point, because Danny essentially ovulated 3 or 4 days into our honeymoon. And whilst we knew that at some point during the honeymoon she would, but because of that, we were trying as much as possible, was, you know, which was great from a honeymoon perspective.
right.
Sorry, babe, we made a commitment. Come here.
Yeah. And
I'm going to add something there just for folks who are thinking, oh, a million should be plenty, right? It only takes one. But there's a I think you can watch it on YouTube, The Miracle of Life, or I think it's called The Miracle of Life. It's a really cool video. I used to show it when I would teach anatomy. I think I may have even watched it in like my sex ed class way back when. And one of the things you can kind of see it there is that when the sperm are making their way through the vaginal and then the fallopian tubes, they've got a long trip to make. And it's interesting because there's actually some sort of defenses that are in place there in the female reproductive structures to sort of ensure that only very, very fit sperm make it.
Huh. Okay.
And even when they get to the egg, there's, I think it's called the corona radiata. There's different layers on the outside of an egg that have to be penetrated.
Yeah.
So there's something called hyaluronic acid, which we know is also found in joints. That's in the head of the sperm, and they bang up against this these protective layers on the egg, and they have to sort of knock away those outer coverings of the egg so that you can finally get a hole in the membrane of the egg,
huh,
the ovum, that the sperm can make its way in. So, like, literally, you've got like a whole, it takes a whole army just to get that one sperm in. And when that happens, the egg actually undergoes some like immediate chemical changes that prevent, in most cases, another sperm from entering. Because obviously, then you've got the wrong number of chromosomes and genes to make an offspring. When you've got two sperm in one egg, then you're probably going to have an issue.
Yeah.
But that's basically what happens. So there's like literally millions upon millions of sperm that start off the journey. And just like the movie The Highlander, there can be only one. Except one that comes through there.
Nerd.
Sorry. And I know. There can be only one. And yeah, you get the electricity and all the lightning when it finally happens. And then boom, you got the position. So that's why, like, oh, I've got 500,000 sperm. Like, it's probably not going to be enough. You need a lot to actually undergo that whole process. So go ahead. I just want to fill that in.
What's the difference between HMG and HCG, Scott?
So HCG is basically, it's just another word for luteinizing hormone.
Right.
And human menopausal gonadotropin is actually a blend of FSH and LH. So follicle stimulating hormone is a different protein peptide hormone than is luteinizing hormone.
Can you back up then for us? Could you please explain? Because this is something we've talked about before. I asked Dave Crossland about it before. I would love to hear your explanation here, though. What is basically FSH and LH? How do they work? And I know you told us about LH some.
Yeah. So it's funny because this is those goddamn reproductive physiologists are so sexually repressive because everything's named after the functions in women because it's so much more complex, really. I mean, you can pick up Lyle McDonald's The Women's Book if you don't believe that. There's just immense complexity of the female reproductive cycles. Guys are relatively pretty simple. So luteinizing hormone is named because of the luteal body. It has to do with the menstrual cycle. Follicle stimulating hormone refers to its effect to stimulate follicular genesis during the menstrual cycle.
Okay.
So there's a luteal and there's a follicular phase in the menstrual cycle. It's one way to look at it. So that's where those names come from. Those hormones also have roles in men. And the roles in men of LH, which is basically what HCG is to tell the Leydig cells to turn on testosterone production. The follicle stimulating hormone, which affects the ovum, the egg, the gamete, the sex cell in the woman, does so to the sex cell in the man, the sperm. So that promotes spermatogenesis or sperm development. So FSH promotes spermatogenesis, the growth and development of and turnover of male sperm, so where you can have fertile sperm that can create a pregnancy. LH turns on testosterone. There's a little bit of I have the paper someplace, but LH also binds. There's different receptors. LH also binds to the FSH receptor, so it has some actions there. LH we can just equivalent because human chorionic gonadotropin was first found in the urine, I think. maybe a pregnant mare is actually, I believe. And it's released by the chorion, which is a structure in a developing embryo and fetus. I forget exactly where you call it the chorion. The names change during the course of the pregnancy. But it actually is released there and feeds back to continue and maintain the pregnancy. So it was found in that context. And then when they analyzed, you know, years later, the protein structure.
Oh, here we go. I've got it. So we ran HCG at 500 units every other day.
Okay.
HMG, and this was mostly because of pricing rather than anything else. So the 3 weeks that I ran, luckily it only took 3 weeks. We ran 75 units twice a week. That's of each luteinizing hormone and follicle stimulating hormone. We also ran 25 milligrams of Proviron a day and Arimidex at half a milligram three times a week. So, I mean, if things had taken a bit longer, or if I'd had another test after a couple of months of running HMG at that dosage and I was still low, then I've seen protocols and that are up as high as 150 units three times a week. So I was using 75 units two times a week. But that cost more than running a heavy growth hormone cycle for
really?
A month.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not cheap at all. We're talking, wow. I think it was about $400 for those 3 weeks.
Oh, wow. Wow. Even at such a low dose, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. So luckily it only took that much, and maybe that's also because we'd preempted everything with the two runs of power PCT beforehand to kind of get me in a good position, or a better position initially.
I've heard
a lot of people
I recommend as using as little as possible, just unless you've got money to burn, really.
Sure.
I was going to say there's a revised protocol that maybe what we post up there is not the revised one, but one of the things that's criticized in that power PCT protocol is the level of HCG. And Dr. Kreisler was big on this. He said he had seen it, and I was just looking for the study. There's a study. The evidence was just sort of, it's like one interpretation of the evidence kind of supports this notion that you can get some desensitization.
Okay.
I think it was maybe more direct than what I first thought, but it was something along the lines, if you have injected like 1,000 IUs or more than that, and then you look at the testosterone surge, this is of HCG, that you get thereafter, and I'm just going by memory, so don't hold me to these details, but it's something along these lines, that you get a diminished testosterone response thereafter compared to if you use a smaller amount, like 500 IUs.
Okay.
And then compare that again later. So there's some desensitization that can happen with the large amounts of HCG. Now,
it's funny. I was just going to ask you about that. That's
the big question. Yeah. So 250 to 500 IUs, like every other day, is what most people will kind of go with. Okay. Some of that, you know, I have to go and look and see. I've dug for this before. It's one of those things that just I have so many little things I have to go back and look for to see if there's updated information. But ideally, you'd want to some degree mimic the endogenous release pattern for HCG. Hmm. Or a luteinizing hormone, excuse me, by using HCG. And I highly doubt that it's an every other day, Monday, Wednesday, Friday phenomenon in those amounts. It's just not happening that way in the body, and it's probably not nearly anywhere like the 2,500. You can, and I think I remember seeing a Rich Piana video, rest in peace, where he was talking about like you can get like 5,000 or even 10,000 IU amps with or vials with HCG and just injecting the whole thing all at once.
Wow.
And that will volumize the testes. But that is probably, if there's a way to cause a desensitization, that would be it.
Okay.
People have even said, I've never seen anything to this degree, but you could even like cause a kind of a permanent desensitization, like an overstimulation type of thing, almost like there's evidence with like glutamine receptors and MSG, that kind of thing can cause like a neurotoxicity, kill brain cells, overstimulate them, and then they just sort of they undergo apoptosis, that you might have the same thing happen in the testes. Never seen any evidence of that effect. That's the idea, is that if you just do that repeatedly, those monstrous doses, which are way super physiological, that you could cause some testicular sort of permanent testicular desensitization by way of killing off some of the cells there, Leydig cells in particular. So, you know, that's, you know, but people still do that. You'll see a rapid effect, and bodybuilders want it now. They want it yesterday. So, you know, you'll get an effect from those large amounts, but it's doesn't seem to make sense physiologically, at least to me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, Will, from end to end, you decided that you guys wanted to have a baby. How long did this whole process take before you actually were able to conceive, before the honeymoon?
Yeah. Let's see. I started working with Scott at the end of October 17, and we conceived on the 28th of April 2018. So 6 months, pretty much.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Luckily, that was first time around, first try. So it was actually, you know, I was fully prepared, and in my head, I had it as it was going to be at least a year. I've got friends who've tried to conceive naturally, and that's taken 12 months.
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, these guys, I mean, literally, and I've, you know, conversations I've had with them and the way they say they're feeling, you know, you just give up. And you don't even want to have sex anymore because it just feels like failure every time.
Yeah.
You get the, I guess the not pregnant result back, right? Yeah. You're going, oh God, okay, we've got to do
it. And that reduces testosterone. When we get defeated, that reduces testosterone. It's like a self-defeating cycle, so to speak.
So it's a vicious circle.
Yeah.
And so just, I guess, last thing I'm really curious about is what happened. You know, you said you weren't like really thrilled with your physique, but what happened afterward? Were you able to bounce back and get to where you were? Because I think that's the thing we're always afraid of, is like there are going to be gains that are lost for good. What happened after the pregnancy? Did you go back to HRT or enhancement? And what happened gained wise when you were done?
In a sentence, and I'll do more than a sentence, but in a sentence, Scott's monster plan is working pretty damn well so far.
Nice.
So, I mean, just to go into what I was doing before, I was the typical more volume is better guy. I was doing up to 60 sets in a workout and trying to condense that into an hour. So literally jumping from exercise to exercise to exercise without rest, which was great for my conditioning, and it was great for, I guess, just getting really lean for a show without having to do much cardio. Well, none at all. But growth-wise, it was terrible. And I mean, I hospitalized myself a couple of times as a result of that. Once through, I had a cyst in my throat. And essentially, it was my immune system just giving up on me, and it's whether it was the training or the 5 grams of gear or whatever it was, something was not good for me, right? And my body wasn't responding very well, and it was agony to swallow. And when I went to the hospital, they told me that the passage where all the food goes through was down to the size of a few millimeters by a few millimeters. And I was forcing 8 meals down. And in that stupid, typical bodybuilder mentality, I'm going, it's only pain, it's fine, it'll be fine, it'll go away. And they're in there telling me they want to stick a needle in my throat to drain this because they're afraid that if I go to home, it might close and I might die in my sleep because I can't breathe.
Oh my God.
You know, so that's kind of the extreme of stupidity as far as bodybuilding goes and ignoring pain. But so I was, you know, went from doing far too much to we're now on a year of fortitude training, and it probably took me about 6 months to get my head around fortitude training, and, you know, a few hints from Scott to really saying, you know, you should try to do less and not train as much, and, you know, it'd probably be good for your growth.
Yeah.
And eventually I got the message. And I've gone from 98 kilos being a real fat shit at the end of that process and getting pregnant, where that's where I was. Now 112 kilos, not entirely a fat shit. I'm probably getting towards being a fat shit.
No, we won't let that happen.
But no, I'm just not in competition shape. That's all. You can still just about see my abs. So, you know, that's a year of fortitude. I'd do no cardio, and that's just diet and lifting heavy.
Hell yeah.
And progressing weight. Oh, and I'm only training 4 days a week, which is great.
Nice.
Yeah, and the thing that was important there, too, is like, we had to fight the urge, like, now you're okay, finally mission accomplished. Let's put the hammer down. Give me the grams, baby. Give me the gear. And we want to try to get the most from the lease. And that's worked pretty well, I think, just to sort of, you know, ride the train of what you can get from everything that you're doing and not try to all of a sudden, you know, throw the whole kitchen sink at it, because you can only grow so fast. So that was a little early.
Yeah,
you quenched pretty quickly, but it was sort of a thought, I think. Yeah,
definitely. And as far as dosages go, I'm just less than a gram total now, and things are going great. So it's all heading in the right direction.
Nice.
And I feel healthy.
Despite the sleep loss that comes with being a father. Yeah.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah,
I don't
know if you can see that in my face. But,
how old is your baby now?
I went to a few friends earlier. She was 10 weeks yesterday.
Well, congratulations.
She's pretty lively.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And what's her name?
Yeah, she's pretty cool. Joy.
Nice.
Yeah.
Scott,
she's mostly full of joy.
I'm sure. Scott, is there any aspects that we aren't covering here from the work you guys did and the observations you've made that would be worth bringing up so that the listeners or, you know, guys in this situation could benefit from?
Yeah, it's just, you can kind of imagine, go back in time, hop in your DeLorean or time machine, go back in time, and imagine the trajectory now, especially, I didn't know that Danny had given you that, like, sort of, kind of an ultimatum, you know, in a certain way. And imagine if just things had gone a different direction, you could be, who knows, you could be in a totally different relationship status, family status, like everything could be so very, very different than it is now. And I think there are guys there are people that do that happens. And another like gem that can be taken from this is that like you really are with bodybuilding because it's such an extreme endeavor. It's so absolutist in so many ways. You are constraining yourself to a certain path to a certain degree, which doesn't allow you to diverge in different directions if you're going to stick on that path. Mm. But you can also sort of take a little bit of a long route like Will has. And now he's basically got both things going on. He's able to bodybuild. He's got it in different perspective, but he's got his family. He's got joy. Mm. And you can do that. And it was less than about a year of sort of coming off the path.
Not even that. It was six months and yeah.
Right, really. So, and now you're back where you wanted to be and things are so much different. So, it's funny because, strength of will is something a lot of bodybuilders will pride themselves on. And having patience in my mind is a very strong depiction of that characteristic. Being able to wait and be persistent and grind, quote unquote, hashtag grind. Well, to be able to look at your whole life with that perspective and say, what's really important? Can I delay my gratification as a bodybuilder in order to serve my greater life's purpose or my greater life's goals or my priorities in a way that Will was able to do? That's badass.
Yeah.
That's a real badass in my mind, that someone who can put their other ambitions aside because they've been able to prioritize being a dad and having a family. That's cool as shit.
Yeah.
And now he can have both. And that's just a beautiful thing. So people can know that, you know, if like a real, I want to say a real man, but, you know, a real someone who's really connected with what's important in their life can step back and put bodybuilding in the right picture, right spot. And it's going to vary for people, different times in their life, depending on the relationship. There's all sorts of ways you can look at it. Sometimes it can be the most glorious, wonderful thing possible. That's absolutely the case. For some people, it can be the most self-evolving process that they may have ever undergone. And then sometimes it needs to be put on the back burner as well. Mm. So that's one of the beauties of this endeavor, is that it's going to be such a teacher in so many ways. But for those who aren't quite, maybe they're concerned that the bodybuilding might not be able to come back in and they might lose sight of it, Will's an example of someone who's showing that's not the case. You can sort of have your cake, you can have your family and your children and eat it too, as long as you're smart about it and patient and willing to, you know, consider doing the right thing in your scheme of priorities. So, yeah.
No, you know, you mentioned about what bodybuilding is in different stages of your life, and it certainly has been a great teacher for me. And I don't think I'd be where I am. I certainly wouldn't be in the relationship I am if it wasn't for bodybuilding, because Dani's a competitor as well.
Right.
So she understands everything, and she understands the mentality and the drive behind the training and everything that we do. But equally, and this is probably quite common amongst all bodybuilders, is that we all have that mentality of bodybuilding is who I am and it defines me. And if, you know, I've been in relationships where people have said to me, it's me or the gym.
Mm.
And my response is always, well, the gym was here before you and it'll be here long after you're gone.
Right.
And Dani never said that to me. She never said it's me or the gym, but from that mentality, that, you know, she's always, one of her aims in her life has always been to be a mother. And so you can understand why she would say to me, you need to be able to make children if we're going to make this work. Because in the same way that bodybuilding has always been one of my goals, and she's never got in the way of that, and she would never want to, equally, I need to be able to give back, right? And so when some people, I don't know, I guess some people are just shocked when I tell them that's what she said to me, you know, is, you know, get your nuts working and make sure we can make a baby.
That's a good boundary.
Right.
And reasonable.
And yeah. It's not, exactly. It's kind of, you know, expected as a man, right?
Right, right.
But most of the time anyway. So I guess my point is I, when she said that to me, a lot of guys have gone, what, really? You let her say that to you? I'm like, well, what do you mean I let her? First, like, yeah, of course, that's her life goal. That's what she wants to do. And whether it's me, with me or with someone else, she's going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And I've been that way. So I can understand where she's coming from. And I guess I had to not let my pride get hurt by her comments and not take it personally and see it from the bigger picture, which is I can't get in the way of her goals in the same way that she doesn't want to get in the way of mine.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. It's great perspective. And I think it's a great lesson because I think that a lot of us kind of feel like, well, we're going to be hardcore. We're going to do whatever it takes. And I've known guys that get right into bodybuilding and they're like, well, I guess that means I'm just not going to have kids now because I'm going to do bodybuilding. And I think it's a good message, I think, to be able to share this stuff. And hopefully it gives some hope too, because I know some guys, there's a guy I'm working with right now who's going through this, and I know it can be discouraging at times.
What's he going through, Scott? Right. He's trying to restore his
hormonal
function.
He's trying to get his wife pregnant. We speak, this is, I know it'll hit home for him. And like I said at the beginning too, a lot of people that ask us questions, you know, they're looking to increase their fertility. You know, they want to be able to have bodybuilding, but at the end of the day, they want to be able to have children too and you know, have a full life. And sometimes that means having kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Scott.
I was going to say, all I would say to people who feel that way is approach it. And really what Scott's just said is that approach it in the way that you approach bodybuilding. Make it your goal and persist no matter what, whether it takes 6 months, it might take a year. You're going to feel like shit. You're not going to be able to get an erection when you're trying to have sex. That you're going to go through all that, and it sucks. It's the worst feeling in the world. But you do come out the other side eventually. And now I'm at a point, and hopefully it's a case for anyone who puts themselves through this, that they've got the best of both worlds. You've got the family that you wanted. And, you know, my daughter now, to me, is the most magical thing in the whole world. All she has to do is smile, and that's my day made. But I've also got bodybuilding. I can still train. I'm the strongest I've ever been.
Yeah.
And you've just got to persist. And I think, personally, for me at least, having Scott as a guide and someone to kind of talk me through the shit times and tell me it's going to be okay, and we will, you know, even if it's just that, it's kind of required. For me it was, but you know, maybe you're strong enough to do it on your own and you can just ignore the feeling, but sometimes you need someone to just say, look, this is part of the process.
Yeah. Yeah, that helps.
I've had clients before who were kind of going down this path, and who actually they vanished, they ghosted. Hmm. I've had that happen, and I couldn't get a hold of them because it's one of those they just didn't want to do it. And that's there's no judgment there. That just demonstrates these are strong-minded people that I'm thinking of, and they just didn't want to do that. It's a really, really tough thing to do.
Sure.
It totally plays games with your sense of self. You see yourself shrink down. You're not what you once were. Everyone's, I think John Meadows, I've heard a couple different situations, but after he had his medical emergency and had his colon removed and he lost a shitload of weight and he went back into the gym and he talked about the woman at the gym said, "I'm surprised you're back here." And he's like, "Well, what do you mean?" And she's like, she basically was insinuating, look how small you are. You're just a shadow of your former bodybuilder self.
Wow.
Like, I would expect you'd just be absolutely embarrassed to show up at the gym looking like this. And John's thinking, I just like to train. This is what I like to do. But it is, for most people, it is kind of a shock. It makes total sense. You know, bodybuilding is a very egotistical endeavor in many ways. But the thing that occurred to me is that this goes back to my thoughts about what's the intrinsic value of this endeavor as a learning process, as a sort of a journey, is that you can take that strength of will, which can be developed in the off season when you're pushing yourself to jam 8 meals down through a millimeter size hole, or you're dieting to where you just feel like you're passing out numerous times during the day, to be able to, you develop a sort of a fortitude there, pardon the pun, in a way that you can also, ideally, if it's to have real value in your life as a whole, be translated into other things, which is what Will did here. Like, literally, he said, okay, I'm going to take the same veracity and drive that I have when I'm pursuing a bodybuilding goal, off season or pre-contest. I'm going to, get in the just craziest friggin' shape that just blows people's minds. I'm going to put that into this, what is now my number one priority, fighting through how shitty this feels in order to get to the other end of having a baby and forming my family. So, that's the thing that, hopefully that most people will get eventually. Not everyone, I don't think, but sometimes bodybuilding could just be a covering strategy, but you develop something that then applies outside of bodybuilding. Hmm. You pick up either some life lessons or some epiphanies or an ability to sort of see, I got it pretty good here. I'm actually choosing to not eat food. I have no room to complain about it. There's a million and one life lessons that can come, but this is a perfect example of one where you just basically, I mean, that's kind of the cool thing is he came to me for bodybuilding, and I was able to coach him through something that was sort of, in a way, dependent upon his ability to really exert his force of will in a non-bodybuilding context. It was all bodybuilding related, but because that same sort of fortitude that he has as a person that makes him a good bodybuilder, that's what allowed Will to push through this process as well and do what he's done. So that's pretty friggin' cool in my mind.
You also said, I think another good pun was, you said the strength of will.
Yeah, there you go. Just no tattoo that says, no, let's not go there. Like, otherwise. Yeah. The thing I was going to ask, too, because I'm sure people are wondering, because there's probably guys out there have been on for a long time.
Yeah.
And they're thinking, when is there a point of no return?
Mm.
5 grams is a lot, but 5 grams for, an 8-week cycle is different than 5 grams for 8 years. So, Will, what was your sort of cycle history and time frame and age? And so how long did you have, if you don't mind sharing, so that people can say, okay, I'm in a similar situation. And Will was able to do it. And also, I think there's some genetic things with your dad, too, that we may have talked about that might have been of concern, too, if I'm remembering correctly.
I don't think so.
No? Okay. Okay. All right.
But history-wise, I'm trying to remember. I competed. My last break, real break, was in 2014. I took 4 weeks off over Christmas. Then until I worked with you, which is obviously not time off because I was using testosterone and anthate and trenbolone and anthate before that. That's 4 weeks off is probably not enough to really be off, right?
from that, I had surgery where I had gynecomastia removed and went straight into a prep, so which was a 13-week prep after that, then stayed on since, so on significant doses, I'd probably say at least between 1.5 and 3 grams for the next 4 years. All right. So from mid-2015 all the way through to the end of 2018 when we started working together, Scott.
Well, that says so a lot.
Previous to 2014, how long had
you been in hospitals? Yeah, so from the beginning of 2015 all the way to the end of, essentially the end of 2018, so 4 years.
Yeah, and previous to that four-week, quote-unquote, break, how long before that?
Yeah, oh, God, probably that test and trend cycle was a 10-week cycle, but uh-huh. Before that, I can't even remember, but probably off. I was certainly blast cruising before that as well. So
for how many years, least, roughly?
Since 2012.
Okay.
So that's what, 7 years total.
Yeah. So that gives people an idea of like a pretty aggressive, you know, on and off, and then consistently on.
Yeah.
For 7 or 8 years, and you're able to come back. So that's pretty freaking cool. I mean, that's a long time for those testes to just be kind of put to sleep, you know.
In
a dormant state, basically.
Yeah.
So that's important. It wasn't as if, you know, you ran a couple cycles and then you like could get things back, and we managed to do that. It was a long time. So
yeah,
that's pretty cool that you know, that you can still bring things back. That really speaks to the power of the Power PCT.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Once again, no puns, really, right?
I know. So I'm like, sorry. Once you get going, like, boom. And then everything's punny.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're at about the hour mark. So let's call it a day here. If there's nothing else I think we covered some really good ground here. Anything else we need to add, Scott?
Is Joy in the room? Can we see her? Is she around?
She might have just got back. Hang on.
Oh, yes.
Let me find out.
Danny. Just want to say there are pictures on Will's Instagram, which, you know, we can create a little followership here. But yeah, this is like talking about a prep without seeing like the show photos. Like, you know, like, where's the product of all the work here?
Let me see. Danny, I'm just going to sneak into the bedroom.
All right. Hopefully she's not sleeping.
Oh, I think she went out again.
Okay.
Let me see. Hang on. Let me see if I can see her. She might just be standing outside. Oh, it sounds like there's a conversation going on outside. Hopefully. No, sorry guys. No luck.
Hold on. I think can you hear me? Yep, I can hear you still.
Yep.
Okay. I'm sorry. I was going out of range of the Wi-Fi. I think she's gone out again. Sorry, guys. I can't find her.
I can. Hello? Yeah. I can. I don't know if you can. Can you play a video from Instagram or Scott with your new fancy equipment?
Yeah, I can. Let's see here.
There's one on there of her laughing and
That's what
smiling. Smiling.
See here, I just sent it to Scott.
Oh, you got it? You sent it to me? All right.
I think so. Yeah, my computer's being weird. Now you got it? Okay.
Yep. I was just trying to open up Instagram myself. I was going to try to do that through the desktop, but let's see here.
Yeah.
Let's see if I can bring it up.
Cutie.
Now, it doesn't look like I'm able to bring your video up, Scott, but I might be able to. What? Let's see here. I'll try to make this quick, guys, because we are already well out of time. If my computer will bring it up. Will, what's your Instagram?
It's will.i.am.isaac.
Okay. Oh, and apparently I'm not typing.
I'm about to send you a picture here.
I got him. I can do a screen share here. Oh my gosh, adorable. Yeah. Give me just a second, guys. I'm going to see if I can do a screen share here.
And I just sent you a picture too.
All right.
You can throw up.
Let's see. There we go. Oh gosh, look at that! Look at that! That smiling face. All right. Yeah, I am screen sharing right now.
Cute. Yeah, she is. Oh, I can't see it, but I know it.
Yeah, it's the first video that Will has most recently posted of her in the crib. Yeah, it looks like. Oh gosh, how old is she here, Will? This is pretty much brand new, huh?
That'll be maybe a week or two old.
Oh, that is so cute.
Yeah. Yeah. So ending on a warm and fuzzy note. This is awesome.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. I brought us back. All right, guys. Well, this has been really cool. Thank you for your story, Will. And thanks for your explanations here, Scott. I think that this stuff will be really beneficial. A lot of people appreciate it.
I hope so. Like this is about as important as it gets, you know, as far as what we're doing as people on the planet. Like, you know, we're peopling, and Will is just peopled.
Yes.
In the form of joy. So yeah, this is important stuff.
All right. All right, guys, for another episode of Muscle Mind Special Edition, Dr. Scott Stevenson, special guest Will. I'm Scott McNally. Guys, we will see you soon. Thanks a lot, Will.
Thank you.
Voices Radio Network.